A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with Dan Waz here in just a minute or two about what's going on in New York and what's going on more generally in the anti-Second Amendment movement. Coming up, we've got today's Armed Citizen Story, Good Deed of the Day, our recidivist report. We are watching what is going on very closely in Minnesota right now. Today, a key date for Second Amendment supporters. There is going to be a House hearing on two bills, one that is a ban on so-called assault weapons, the other a ban on so-called assault weapons and, quote-unquote, large-capacity magazines. This bill, at least the magazine ban bill, has already been modified. As it was introduced, it would have made it a felony crime, punishable by 5 years in prison, to possess a magazine that could hold more than 10 rounds, or a so-called assault weapon. The Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus pointed out that that is a more severe penalty than what the state of Minnesota hands down for domestic violence, for fifth-degree rape. And the bill sponsor apparently reads the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus, because he went back and hurriedly changed the bill. So now it is not 5 years in prison. Now it's just 2 years in prison for possessing the magazines that you lawfully purchased and the firearm that you lawfully purchased, unless you get a certificate of ownership from the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension in Minnesota. In order to get that certificate of ownership, which shows that, you know, you purchased your so-called assault weapon before the ban went into effect, among other things, you would have to allow law enforcement into your home without a warrant, so they could inspect and see how your firearm is stored. Yeah. Again, those bills are coming up in a House committee today. Now, the Minnesota House is tied. So you've got a Republican Speaker of the House, but under this power-sharing agreement that they worked out with the Democrat Farmer Labor Party, the Democrats, but in Minnesota they have to be different and unusual, so they're the DFL. Under this power-sharing arrangement, the chair of the committee's switches from week to week. So last week, a Republican chaired the House Public Safety Committee. This week, a Democrat is chairing the committee. And I don't think it's a coincidence that they're hearing these gun and magazine ban bills today, when a Democrat's got the gavel. Now, in order for these bills to get out of committee, at least one Republican's going to have to join Democrats and vote in favor of this bill. The committees as well are tied up, just like the House as a whole. So a tie vote's not enough to advance this legislation. You got to have a majority, just a majority of one, but a majority. So if Republicans hold firm, these bills should be defeated if they come up for a vote today. And again, we will keep our eyes on what's going on. Governor Tim Walz, by the way, says he's got another gun control announcement. As of mid-morning on Tuesday, he has not yet made that announcement, but we'll probably be talking about it on Wednesday's Cam and Company. Right now, though, let's get to our conversation with Dan Waz, talking about what's going on in New York State and the gun control guilt trip that anti-gunners are engaging in nationwide. Take a look and a listen. Dan, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to see you again.
Hey, Cam, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So I want to ask before we get started, you were at Freedom Fest down in Florida. I know that my colleague Tom Knighton was supposed to be there. He was a little under the weather, so he couldn't make it. But how was that Second Amendment gathering there in Florida?
Yeah, it was good. Oh, that's right. I saw Tom. Was it last year or the year before?
Probably both. Last year, the year before. Yeah.
No, it was good. You know, and not only is it a good chance for people, you know, patriots to get together and we talk about stuff. We literally talk about stuff like, what are we going to do about this? What are we going to do about that? And these events are uniting, which is really the best part. Plus, it's in Florida, so I could get away from New York weather for a little while. So,
right now, yeah, and you know, it's a little bit different challenge in Florida than it is in New York. In Florida, you've got ostensibly a pro-gun legislature, you've got a pro-gun governor, but you have Senate leadership that has basically bottled up a lot of pro-Second Amendment reforms. in New York, you're dealing with a very hostile legislature in general, right? It's not like there's a pro-gun majority. You know, if we only could get rid of this one lawmaker,
right?
I mean,
it's right. We have this one.
It's an anti-gun Senate, right? So it's two bodies that are anti-gun.
It's so awful. I mean, you know how long it took just to get that Bruin, the Bruin case to the Supreme Court. It took 7 years, and then as soon as the decision came down, 8 days later, Hochul had a new package of basically the same gun laws. She called it the Concealed Carry Improvement Act. It's a constant battle, and this is the thing that I'm really I'm starting to really understand that we're never going to have a free ride here with our Second Amendment. It's always, and you've been in this longer than I have, it's always going to be like this. It's a constant battle to just grasp onto whatever resembles our Second Amendment that we can.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we are making strides, I think. We are, I think we have the upper hand at the moment, but you're right, this never goes away. And you know, whether it's at the federal level or it's the state level, I mean, I'm dealing with this in Virginia. For the most part, we've got pretty good gun laws, but Democrats took control of state government and they're trying to turn us into New York or New Jersey, in the span of just a couple of months. And you know, that challenge, I mean, look, as long as there are people out there who deny that we have a right to keep and bear arms, who, have fallen under that, the sway of that false premise that, more guns equals more crime and less guns makes us safer. And those, again, who simply want to control gun owners, yeah, want to control Americans, right, who despise the idea of a free people being able to exercise the right to keep our arms as a defense against tyranny. You're right. These struggles and these battles are going to continue, probably long after you and I have departed from this world. But that doesn't mean that we can't work to strengthen and secure these rights wherever possible and for as long as possible, right?
Of course.
It's just that in a state like New York, and sadly now in a state like Virginia, we're having to play defense far more than offense, like they're doing in West Virginia, where they just introduced that bill to create a was an Office of Public Safety, I think it was, that is going to sell machine guns to a West Virginia resident. So I would love for New York and Virginia to get to that point, Dan, but I think we're quite a ways away from that.
You know, you said something that's really important, and I don't think we focus on this enough, is we are always on defense, most of the time on defense, and we should be on offense. But the reality is we don't want this fight. We never did. And we conservatives, Republicans, gun owners in general really are passive people. We just want to live our lives and want to enjoy the rights that our founders, you know, outlined for us. So that's why we always seem to be on defense, because the political left, they attack that all the time. They're very aggressive and very and always on, you know, they're always starting the fight. Mm-hmm. We're always finishing it, but we don't want it like this. We never did.
Yeah, well, so to that end, you know, in New York right now, you guys are playing defense. There are a couple of big bills, one that would not just ban 3D printed firearms, but would essentially ban any 3D printer that could be used to print a firearm or a gun part. And then you've got this bill, very similar to what we have seen in California. It is not specifically a bill to ban the sale of Glock handguns, but it would apply to Glocks and Glock clones, right? Any striker fire with a cruciform trigger bar would be prohibited for sale. This is, and it sounds to me, Dan, like, I mean, you know, Glock has sort of changed. I mean, they didn't sort of, they did change the design of their handgun. Whether or not it was in response to these bills and these lawsuits, I think is up for contention. But, you know, we've seen, even with these new models, you can go on YouTube, you can find people that have, you know, put a switch on these new versions of Glock. So I don't know that the design change is going to prevent the sale of Glocks going forward in states like California or New York if this bill passes.
No, it's not. There's always going to be a new attack. And it, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Glock actually discontinued 20, 30 or 40 models. It was a lot.
Yeah.
And that, how many was it, Cam, by the way? I can't quite remember.
It was over 30. Okay. I want to say 32 or 33 different models.
So what this... What this new bill is, it's A199, and it talks about any semi-automatic pistol with a cruciform trigger bar that can be readily converted by hand or with common household tools into a machine gun, so-called machine gun, solely by the installation or attachment of a pistol converter. Now, this bill, and people might not know this, was similar to New York Bill S9225, which did not advance past the Senate Codes Committee last year. So it got it died in committee, basically. So we're hoping that this one does too, but I don't know. I mean, New York's been really aggressive.
They have been. And, you know, again, I mean, California took the lead on this in terms of legislation. But, you know, we've seen lawsuits filed by Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson, the mayor of Baltimore, Maryland, a number of other, you know, cities and states that have filed litigation, basically accusing Glock of manufacturing firearms that are readily converted to machine guns. And again, the end goal of that legislation is to prevent the sale of these handguns, right? And in sure. Illinois, for example, is not just in Chicago, but they want to ban on sales across the state of Illinois. And so, you know, I would not be surprised, honestly. In fact, I'm kind of surprised we actually haven't seen Letitia James file litigation against Glock, but maybe that's coming. But
well,
again,
you know, and that would be to them, that would be considered a feather in their cap to literally ban a firearm manufacturer from doing business in the state. Any Democrat governor would love that. Mm-hmm. And that's like them cutting the head off the snake, that, you know, as they look at it. It's probably the most, it's just so dishonest. And now they're talking about, you know, safe storage with in-home inspections. Of course they want that stuff. They're talking about, you know, they get rid of these grandfather clauses on a lot of this stuff, and they don't want transfer of firearms. You know, part of these bills will say no transfer to anybody of certain firearms, which means the firearm dies with the owner. And that's exactly what they want. They want to slowly just eliminate firearm ownership. And they have very strategic ways of doing it. And I don't think we're always focused on their tactics.
You know, that's a really good point. And I heard an argument, I think it was actually in Virginia, where they were debating the ban on so-called assault firearms, which basically, you know, so-called assault weapons, centerfire semi-automatic firearms. And one of the Democrats who was in favor of this bill talked about how, you know, yes, people are allowed to keep the guns that they currently own, but they're not allowed to transfer them. And so the idea is that as years go by, there will be fewer and fewer of these firearms in our state, right? And so it is a slow motion gun ban, right? It's the ban on the sale going forward. So, all right, now you got X number of firearms, of these types of firearms in the state. And then going forward, that number is going to shrink over time.
Sure. Everyone's going to die.
Well, unfortunately, yeah, you're right about that. But the gun control lobby is good at playing the long game. They're not necessarily great at winning in the long term, right? I mean, go back to the 1970s and the goal was to ban handguns. That's now off the table. But they're really good at shifting their priorities. They're never going to let go of that end goal. And if they have to make a tactical retreat, they will. And they'll come at, you know, the issue from a different angle. They'll, again, instead of, you know, okay, we can't ban all handguns, what if we ban the most popular handguns in the country? Can we do that? And if we do that, then maybe let's go after the second most popular handguns in the country, right? You know, and you've also been talking about one of the arguments that is used in the gun control debate. It's the guilt trip, right? It's the collective guilt trip. If you don't support these life-saving measures, then you are a tool of the gun lobby. You are perhaps a monster yourself who's intent on committing violence, right? They shape this debate, or they want to try to shape this debate in a way that they're the ones wearing the white hats. And if you're not on their side, then you are on the side of mass murderers. You are on the side of gangbangers. You're on the side of violent criminals.
Yeah. And, you know, emotion is the biggest tool. I mean, that's the thing that drives legislation the most. You know, when they're not using fear, you know, fear is used, obviously fear is used in the anti-gun campaigns. And it's used because as soon as there's a killing, and a gun is involved, the first thing they do is they roll the AR-15 across the TV screen and tell you that this is the problem. You should be very scared of these things. But these politicians over here, they're running for office and they promise to keep you safe. So just vote for them. So fear is very prevalent in this whole debate. But guilt is really being used a lot too, because and they'll use it as a collective guilt. They'll say things like, we need to stop this. We need to protect these kids from this gun violence, right? We need to do this. We need to do that. And it appeals to a more collective audience, people who, well, frankly, people who want to be part of the group. You know, these are the kids who needed to sit at the popular table in junior high school. They want to be part of that collective group. Well, we need to do something about this. And it feels good to them because they feel like they're doing a good thing by subverting their fellow citizens' rights. And so guilt is always used. And you know, you'll see, oh, don't you want to save the children? You know, and the assumption, the underlying assumption, which is a false assumption, is that more gun laws will do it. And we know better than these people that it's the gun laws that often cause the problem. Gun-free school zones, all sorts of different gun restrictions. Any gun-free zone for that matter is a danger zone. So it's the gun laws that cause the problems, but they don't fix those issues. They don't let teachers carry armed in school. They seem to just use the deaths to push for more gun control.
Yeah, I mean, and how many times have we seen, you know, somebody commits a violent crime and it turns out they've got a lengthy criminal history. They're out on probation at the time. I cover these stories each and every day on Cam and Company. Yeah. And you know, it's sad. The 20-year sentences that get cut down to 10, which in turn is 5 years with time off for good behavior. That's a real issue. But rather than address, you know, those who are actually committing violent crimes, they want to turn lawful gun owners into criminals. And you're right. They do have this attitude. There was a tweet, you may remember this, Poe Murray from, it was Newtown Action Alliance, I think is the name of the group, formed after Sandy Hook. And she was on X a couple of years ago, and she basically said, you know, if you don't support a ban on assault weapons, you care more about your guns than your kids. Sure. And Ryan Petty, whose daughter Elena was murdered at Parkland, responded. And he said, do you really think that I care more about my guns than my daughter? And Poe Murray said, if you don't support a gun ban, then yeah. Well, that to me is a perfect distillation of this attitude that they really do. I mean, look, it's a collective guilt trip, but I think sadly, some of these activists really do believe that if you're not on board with their agenda, that must mean that you're a gun humper who cares more about the guns in your safe or maybe the guns that they think you'd leave lying out on the coffee table than your own flesh and blood.
Well, have you ever heard of the term projection? Projection is when we think we know what the other person is thinking. And what I found in doing a lot of research in this area is, you know, gun owners, we all project on each other, but gun owners, you look at firearms as a way of preserving life. That's why we feel comfortable when we're in a room with other gun owners and you see handguns on hips. We feel comfortable because we project our thoughts, our good nature thoughts, our life preserving thoughts onto other people. So gun owners always look at guns as a way of preserving life and saving people, protecting your family. The reason these people on the left don't want guns is because they project as well, but they look at guns as devices to kill people. Their whole view and their whole, it's a skewed view, but it's how they've been trained and conditioned to see guns, is that they believe that if you have a gun, your intentions are to hurt other people. It's a real scary thought when you can really understand what they're thinking, because you know, we're not the bad guys here. We're trying to save lives. They're the ones who are trying to ban guns. They're the ones who really have, you know, bad thoughts about firearms and about the value of human life. And to me, they're much scarier.
Absolutely. You know, and the really scary thing is, you know, is how easy it is to fall into that trap. I mean, we saw this after Alex Pretty was shot and killed in Minneapolis, right? We saw Trump administration officials, FBI Director Cash Patel. Nobody brings a gun to a protest if they've got peaceable intentions. You know, nobody carries two magazines with them unless they have, you know, something violent in mind. You know, these are people, I don't think anybody would say that Cash Patel's a gun control activist. These are people who, you know, for whatever reason, though, fell into that trap of this is unusual to me. Therefore, I'm going to ascribe the most negative implications to this behavior that I possibly can. Right. And and, you know, this is something, too, I think that gun owners need to be aware of is that, you know, we do live in this sort of political binary system where vast majority of Democrats are in favor of gun control. Vast majority of Republicans generally are supportive of the Second Amendment. But that doesn't mean we can take that support for granted, right? I mean, we continually have to be working to educate not just non-gun owners, but even the folks that we believe to be on our side, even the folks who generally are on our side. They still need to be educated. They still need to understand that pro-Second Amendment mindset because, frankly, for a lot of these politicians, it may not come naturally to them.
You're absolutely right. And there are two major components to this. There's the fight that we have on the legislative side, you know, taking these laws to court. And then we also have the responsibility to, like you said, educate these people and kind of on the social side of it all. And you're right, because, you know, people growing up now, getting into their 30s and 40s, you know, they've been already conditioned to a certain extent to this anti-gun, you know, fear campaign. Mm-hmm. So it's a constant battle. And I wish that we could bring more, I wish more schools, even if they are in red, you know, red states or red districts, I wish more schools would start embracing, you know, in-school target shooting and things like that, sporting events, because it will start to normalize firearms again. We've gone the complete other direction where we're normalizing the hatred and the fear and the guilt of guns. Yeah. You know, that's normal. Now we have to switch that around, and that's a narrative that we have to constantly push and work on. Yeah. And I do that. That's my main concern right now, because I understand how the narrative and the overall feeling of people really shapes our society with respect to laws.
Absolutely. There was something I mentioned during Gun Rights Policy Conference in my talk. I was trying to think of like outside of the box things that we could be doing, right, to sort of change the culture. One of the things that I came up with was we should be working to make high school trap shooting an accredited sport, right? I mean, in New York State, where you live, it is one of the most popular club sports. You've got thousands of kids from across the state who are participating. They're already taking part in this, but it's not, you can't let her in trap shooting at your high school. Even if you have a high school, you know, trap shooting team, it's a club activity. I would love to see states actually embrace this. And again, it's probably going to start in red states. But you know, if you want to talk about normalizing gun ownership and introducing a new generation to how to be safe and responsible and have fun with firearms. I mean, this is already happening. You know, the Minnesota high school clay target championships, something like 7,000 kids participate. I mean, it's amazing, great. You know, but there's still, I think, a lot of room for growth. And that's one area where I think we could be doing some work normalize gun ownership, normalize the shooting sports, introduce, you know, a new generation to their right to keep their arms in a way that is, at the end of the day, a lot of fun. We know that the gun control advocates hate youth shooting sports. So we can, you know, poke them in the eye at the same time. I think that you're right that, getting back to what you said a couple of minutes ago, this is a fight that's never ending. And so we constantly need to be looking for ways to press our advantage and not just play defense. And I think you've given us a couple of things to chew over, Dan. I want to ask if folks want to find more of your writing, your videos, your podcast, where can they do
My book series is Good Gun, Bad Guy. So you can go to goodgunbadguy.com, goodgunbadguy.com. I also have a web show called The Loaded Mic. And you can find that at loadedmic.com. Goodgunbadguy.com is probably the place to go. All my writings and links to all the stuff I'm doing with GOA and other publications and things. So goodgunbadguy.com is probably the best place to find my stuff.
Awesome. Well, Dan, I always love talking with you, man. I appreciate you carving out a couple of minutes of your day today, and I look forward to doing this again in the very near future.
Thanks, pal. Anytime.
All right. Thanks, Dan. My thanks to Dan for joining us on the program. Looking forward to seeing him back again here soon. Now, before we get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for a second. From city streets to mountain trails, your gear should go wherever life takes you. That's why at Modern Rugged Leather, every bag is handcrafted from premium, responsibly sourced leather. It's designed to look sharp, last long, and tell a story of its own. Every stitch, each buckle, each strap, reflecting timeless craftsmanship. It's backed by a lifetime warranty. Because quality shouldn't quit when the adventure begins. So whether it's the boardroom or the back roads, Modern Rugged Leather helps you carry confidence every step of the way. Modern Rugged Leather. Modern style, timeless durability, backed for life. Life takes you places. Make sure your gear keeps up. Shop the full collection and find yours today, even if it looks just like mine, at modernrugged.com. Again, that is modernrugged.com. I did take this Modern Rugged bag with me on a road trip this weekend. Held up great. And, I got to say, I mean, like, this is pretty slim, right? It's not big and bulky, but man, it just holds so much stuff. I was able to put my laptop in, big bulky, power cord, mouse pad. I use a Mac, so they don't have USB ports anymore. I have to have a little separate USB hub. Slip that in. And a couple of books that I was able to put inside. And it not only held all of that stuff, but it, again, was still really slim. It wasn't, big and bulky at that point. So I honestly can't say enough about my Modern Rugged bag. I hope that you'll get yours today again at modernrugged.com. And certainly want to thank the folks at Modern Rugged for being a part of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start with this story out of Detroit, Detroit 2. Detroit police suspect in beating deaths of three men found in basement was on parole. These three men in question, beaten and stabbed, found in the basement of a home neighbors say was a known drug house. The victims have criminal histories. The suspect who was arrested, not yet formally charged, at least as of this report, also with a lengthy criminal history at the relatively young age of 27. The police chief in Detroit talked about some of the crimes this individual has been convicted of, including carjacking, armed robbery, felony firearm, fleeing police, resisting and obstructing. Now, felony firearm in Michigan is basically carrying without a valid concealed carry permit. That is not a violent offense. And there are individuals who are convicted of felony firearm who are not violent offenders. This guy, on the other hand, convictions for carjacking and armed robbery alone, again, he's 27 years old. What type of plea deal did he receive for carjacking that he's already back out on the streets? What type of plea deal did he receive for armed robbery that he's already back out on the streets? Presumably, those were two different offenses. So, again, he was convicted of one of those crimes, got out of prison, committed another crime, got out of prison, and now stands accused of three counts of murder. I am just gobsmacked by that. And hopefully we'll learn more information about the specifics of this individual's criminal history. Because, again, I'm very curious how somebody with a record of violent crimes that were that serious was out on these streets and allegedly able to, beat three men to death with a hammer. Instead of being stuck in prison for armed robbery or for carjacking. Now, today's Armed Citizen story. From Ohio, Cincinnati Inquirer reported a shooting outside of an Oakley Steak and Shake was apparently an act of self-defense in a attempted robbery. Cincinnati Inquirer says the incident happened last month, and the man who was killed outside of this Steak and Shake restaurant was robbing someone who then shot the man in self-defense. Police say a 31-year-old Maris Kelly died of multiple gunshot wounds around 6:30 on January 27th. Kelly had pulled a gun on a man that he knew to try to rob him, according to police records. Kelly managed to steal the man's iPhone, as well as more than $3,000 in cash. But shortly after the robbery, Kelly was shot by the man in the parking lot of the Steak and Shake. The man then called 911, told the dispatcher that he, quote, had to shoot Kelly because Kelly had attempted to rob him and pulled a gun on him first. Police found Kelly in the parking lot of the restaurant when they arrived. Lieutenant Jerome Herring told Inquirer Media that's where they found the suspect there. The department spokesman, Anthony Mitchell, had previously said that one person was detained for questioning after the shooting. But according to the Cincinnati Inquirer, the case is now closed because prosecutors declined to press charges since it was deemed to be an act of self-defense. So there you go. This was in the Oakley neighborhood, I guess, of Cincinnati, not a separate jurisdiction there in Ohio. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing in Peoria, Illinois, a story we've covered several times before here. Good Samaritan saves driver from flaming vehicle. First of all, I had no idea that there were this many car accidents that involved vehicles bursting into flames, but also this many Good Samaritans around the country who are willing to put themselves at risk in order to save the lives of others. So this was Monday morning, about 5:45. Fire crews responded to a crash with entrapment. When they got there, they saw a vehicle that had struck a tree, engine compartments fully on fire. But before the crews got onto the scene, somebody who saw the crash was able to remove the unresponsive driver from the vehicle. Battalion Chief Josh Martin said their selfless intervention was nothing short of heroic and proved instrumental in saving the driver's life. Driver taken to a local hospital with serious injuries. Name of the Good Samaritan has not been reported. Hopefully they will get some recognition if they want it, or if they don't mind the recognition. I know that some Good Samaritans just prefer to quietly stay in the shadows. They don't need any acknowledgement, but in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Whoever you are, Good Samaritan there in Peoria, Illinois, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. I want to thank you very much for being a part of the program as well. We'll be back here tomorrow talking about Governor Tim Walz's new gun control proposal in Minnesota, as well as anything else that might pop up between now and then. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today, keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from across the nation, including some very interesting infighting between gun control groups in New Mexico over SB 17, that sweeping gun ban bill that failed to get out of a House committee before the legislature adjourned. Every town is incensed, but one gun control group in New Mexico is explaining why it opposed the legislature. We've got to that story and a lot more for you, including Gun Owners of America's bill in West Virginia that would allow the state to sell machine guns to its residents. Yeah, how about that? How many other states might that be introduced in? Well, we're talking about that as well at Bearing Arms. If you like what you see, we'd encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Use the promo code FIGHT. You can get 60% off your membership. And no matter what tier of support you choose, you'll be supporting the work that we're doing at Bearing Arms, and I want to thank you for that. Have a great rest of your 2A Tuesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe,